welcome to Uncle Steve's Iron Maiden Zone. I'm your host, Uncle Steve, and this week I have a brand new Iron Maiden story for you. Coming to you from the United States, from the state of Nevada, I have on the line with me Eric Stangland. How are you, Eric?
I'm doing great, Uncle Steve. How are you doing? Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you coming on and doing this, man. It's if people don't come on the show, then I just don't have anything to talk about. Oh, man. So real quick, I noticed here a couple things. A, you are a guitar teacher.
That's correct.
Is that what you do? Is that your, like, was that what you do for a living?
I teach guitar and I also play gigs, and that's what I do for a living.
That's awesome. Man, that is awesome. So that'll be cool because your perspective, and I know you even told me so in an email, but your perspective, I'm sure, is pretty unique based on, like, when I listen to solos and I try to explain things, like I talk about Dave Murray or Adrian or Yannick or whatever, I'm sure you're going to have a lot better perspective on that than I would. So, now another thing is you are a host of a podcast.
That is correct. Mixtapes. And I am a co-host of a basketball podcast called Not In My House.
Is your basketball podcast, is it focus on pro, college, or what?
Yeah, we do. We basically interview people's careers that are finished, that are we've had Hall of Famers. We've had college basketball players, pro basketball players, overseas players, high school phenoms that never made it into the league.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a pretty cool show. I mean, we've had Oscar Schmidt, Dino Raja, Charlie Ward. We've had a lot of Chris Herron, who had a 30-30 on ESPN. So we've had a lot of guests, and we just look for stories that are unique.
Now, your mixtapes podcast. So what exactly are you doing there?
So mixtapes is basically like a mixtape, right? But it's all stuff about like music or podcasting, just like audio type of stuff. So I've had like Kenny Wayne Shepherd on the show. I've had Tracy Guns on the show. I've had Joel Hoekstra from Whitesnake on the show. I'll interview friends of mine and other people about we had a Die on the Hill segment where it was like, give me an opinion that you're going to die on the hill on that most people don't agree with, that type of stuff. Me and a buddy of mine doing a guitar lesson on there. I'm just doing interviews and some album reviews. I keep it loose. I've had a lot of book reviews lately. So I have Martin Popoff on. So I've done the Ozzy at 75 book. I'm going to be doing the Rush book soon. There's a Van Halen book I'm doing. So just kind of all like music, but like, you know, a big wide scope of it.
Sure. That's cool. You know, it gives you room to, you're not tied down to one little thing. So I got you there. Yeah. We try to do some of that as well. So, you know, it's not just, I've never done a book review, but I've read some books. So
the book reviews are fun, man, because you know, you get the book sent to you, and it's just neat to see somebody else's perspective on an artist that you really love. So, like, I was a huge Ozzy guy growing up. Randy Rhoads is part of the reason I started playing guitar. And, you know, so Daniel Bixpen sent me his book about Ozzy at 75, and it was funny. I almost didn't even have to read it. I almost did it just to, like fact check it because I was such an Ozzy fan. I knew almost everything about Ozzy, especially in that time period, you know what I mean?
Sure. That's cool. So you growing up, you're listening to music, obviously. When do you get in, like, okay, let's see. How do you discover Iron Maiden?
Okay, how do I discover Iron Maiden? It's kind of funny. I saw Van Halen on TV on the Jump video, and I was 9 years old, and I wanted to play guitar. My mom wouldn't let me get a guitar until I graduated eighth grade. So I get my guitar, and I think the first time I was ever aware of Iron Maiden was probably at a basketball or soccer camp, and a kid was wearing an Iron Maiden t-shirt. And I was like, whoa. You know, because as a young kid, you're like, that's kind of heavy, right? You know, seeing Eddie. I think it might have been the Killers album cover.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, whoa, holy crap, you know. And then I believe it was probably Run to the Hills. Made in Japan was one I had early, which is funny because for all the older listeners, you know, I'd save my allowance and I'd go to the, my dad would drive me to the record store and then, you know, you only have so much money, right? So you're like, okay, is it going to be Blizzard of Oz or is it going to be, Number of the Beast? Is it going to be, you know? And you had to make those hard decisions, and then you'd listen to that record as much as you could until you cut lawns again, and you got enough money to go back to the record store, right? So MTV helped a bit. I would say Run to the Hills might have been the first time I actually heard Iron Maiden that I was aware of, seeing the video on MTV. But it was a little bit later. The first record I bought from Maiden when they released a new record, you know, how young I was Seventh Son. And I remember buying that. That's my favorite Iron Maiden record. I absolutely love that record. So I think that's where it kind of started. It wasn't a guitar thing, you know, like Eddie, Randy, Tony Iommi, those guys were my guitar guys. And then you just grow further into, like, the more you listen to music, the more you start getting into, like, Yngwie and George Lynch, Warren Demartini, Jakey Lee, all those guys. But I really liked Maiden's songwriting, and the guitars weren't something that jumped out at me as much as I liked the riffs. I liked Bruce's voice. I liked Deano too. Had no problem with Deano stuff. And then I just started learning. I had a really bad Iron Maiden tab book for all you guitar players out there. It was the one, the Trooper cover, where it did like the first four records, and it's not done well. So I learned a lot of Iron Maiden songs wrong the first time. So it was kind of fun relearning them the right way after that. But I think that's kind of how I got started with Maiden.
Interesting. So the first song you might have heard was probably Run to the Hills. So Seventh Son era, obviously, I came in, first album I had was Live After Death,
okay.
And I got that probably, I'm guessing summer of 86 is my, or school year of 85, 86.
That's about right.
School year ended, I remember getting Somewhere in Time when it came out, first new album, and went from there. So when Seventh Son came out, that was the first new album they put out as you were a fan at that point?
Yes.
Okay. So, and you said you had, so let's just jump back here. So you said you at some point had Maiden Japan pretty early on.
I did. I mean, the statute of limitations is probably over by now. You had friends that would tape cassettes for you and things like that. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I know I had Power Slave on a cassette tape that was not Power Slave.
I know
that happened. I think I got Maiden Japan because it was an EP, if people remember. So it was only like $5. So that was like, I can get this, and then I can also get another tape. Because you have to remember, when you don't have a lot of money, sometimes you're making those deals where you're like, I could get this EP and that EP. You know, this tape is a lot cheaper than the newer tape. So that's kind of how I think I started, collecting my Maiden collection, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. So if you heard Bruce first,
yes,
and then you heard, what was your initial thought when you heard Paul?
You know what? I liked it. And I'm one of those weirdos that I don't care for Killers. I think it's got a couple great songs on it. I love the first Iron Maiden record. I wish it had better production. So Deano doesn't bother me at all. I mean, like Phantom of the Opera, Prowler. I loved his voice on Killers, the track Killers, Murder in the Rue d'Orgue. I mean, I like Deano stuff. It was evident, like, his range wasn't where Maiden was going, so I couldn't see him going further in Maiden, the direction that Maiden went into, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm 100% there with you. I think the first album is better than Killers is. The production's better on Killers, which is the only reason I think a lot of people gravitate to Killers more.
I love it, dude. So, we think exactly the same, and I get so much stuff for that on that because, like, I think the production value is why people like Killers more than they think.
And the album cover.
Oh, the album cover is so iconic.
Because you got Eddie going from, he looks kind of weird to – he's iconic, like you said. That's an iconic, So, okay. So obviously, I know you told me a while back that you had went with a guitar student, and you just went through the entire catalog of Iron Maiden. So I do have a couple of questions about guitar. You said you started playing guitar when you were around
about 13.
Okay, and it was obviously, like you said, Eddie, Tony Iommi, Randy Rhoads, those kind of the guys that got you into it. So when did you start, like, at what point did you kind of go, I want to be a teacher. I want to be teaching people guitar. Like, where did that come into play for
you? I loosely showed friends stuff in high school, you know. And then when I was going to college, I moved across country. I didn't know anybody. So I thought it'd be a cool way to kind of meet people and offer guitar lessons, which was completely ridiculous because I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I could play well, but I didn't know how to teach. And then there was a music store down the street from my house that I moved into with some friends. I needed to get a job because the job I had, the girl couldn't drive me to the job anymore because I moved like literally 2 miles away from where I was living. And my buddy's like, hey, the music store's right down the street. Just go get a job there. So I went down the street to say, hey, I'll tune guitars. I'll sweep the floors. I'll do whatever. He's like, we don't need any help on the floor, but we need an extra guitar teacher. And I was like, okay, well, when do I audition? They're like, well, we know who you are, you know, because I was playing in a pretty popular local band at the time. They're like, just, you know, here's what the room rent is, and you'll have to share your room right now with the piano teacher or another room here and there. We don't have a room for you yet. And that's kind of how it started. So it was one of those things that I just kind of fell into and then grew to love over the years.
That's awesome. So as a teacher, over the years, I guess because Maiden, for a long time, you know, they've gotten bigger, they've gotten smaller, they've gotten bigger again. So do you get a lot of requests, like when people come in, for wanting to learn Maiden or Maiden style?
Not in the beginning. In the beginning, so this is like 94 I started teaching, so it's 30 years ago, which is crazy. it was Nirvana, Offspring, and Green Day. That's all I taught. Like, literally, it was insane. And I think that's why I was successful as a teacher in the beginning, because I didn't have to teach stuff I couldn't teach. Does that make sense? You know, the internet's pretty new still. Like, you know, you didn't have a laptop unless you were rich, you know, so I wasn't using computers or anything to teach with. So, you know, being able to teach those things, work on actually teaching and style of teaching. I would teach Maiden here and there. I think Maiden got a little bit of popularity learning during the reissues in 98. You know, when they did such a great job with those reissues, I think people started to want to learn Maiden a little bit more. But then there was this weird shift where it seemed like in the early aughts, people wanted to start learning Maiden. And I don't know if it was Bruce coming back or what was going on, but you know how that happened. It was like they weren't playing big places at first with Bruce. Like they were doing those like triple bill shows with like Dio and Motorhead or Queensryche and them, and or Dream Theater and them, and then they just got really popular out of nowhere. And I don't know if it was because of Rock Band or Guitar Hero or some of their music might have been in a movie or something, but they kind of shot up. And that's when I started teaching Hollow Be the Name a lot, The Trooper a lot, Number. Mm-hmm. But I teach it. I teach quite a bit of it now, which is a ton of fun. I enjoy teaching it, and it's mostly Bruce era. You know, most part. But I get to teach Family of the Opera, which is cool. And you can definitely hear where Master of Puppets middle section was ripped off from. Metallica definitely stole that middle section.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah.
That you say that.
Same chord progression. It's crazy. I mean, like the actual da 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 da, it's the same thing. It's just a little different the way Metallica plays it. They play it slower.
Interesting.
So I see it a lot more now. And it's obviously the classic stuff, but no new stuff really, which is surprising.
Yeah, that kind of is not surprising. It's because so many people gravitate toward classic era Maiden. Like every now and then, I have lots of conversations with people, and sometimes people will be going, they'll be talking to me and go, I like the old stuff, and I'm going like, okay, everybody likes the old stuff, you know? It's the new stuff where people, you know, come and go on. As a couple of quick questions on guitar, and then we'll kind of start discussing some of the albums and stuff. So as far as a teacher or someone who plays guitar, do you have a song by Iron Maiden that is A, your favorite to teach, and B, your favorite to play?
I like teaching Hallowed for sure. And to keep on that theme of like where you hear Maiden, I think this is where this helps too, is I'm teaching Last Resort by Papa Roach again, and God, they lifted that riff from Hallowed Be Thy Name. If you go back, and listen to it, it's like,
oh wow,
right? You got a guitar teacher on the show, Uncle Steve. You're gonna learn some similarities today. So that's the one I dig teaching. I dig teaching the Trooper too. I like teaching stuff that's attainable for students. I think that's fun to see them get it. One song I got to teach, I got to teach two songs I absolutely love teaching. One, and I've only taught them once. One was Seventh Son, the actual song. And taught Alexander the Great, which was cool as hell because there's so many neat little parts in Alexander the Great that it's just like, you know, I have one student that's going to be the student we talk about later in the Iron Maiden actual conversation that we have. He's the one that I've got to teach a lot of Iron Maiden to that is not your typical, you know, songs that everybody knows from Iron Maiden. Like, you know, Your Wasted Years, You Run to the Hills, Number. Like, he goes obscure. I've done Loneliness, the Long Distance Runner with him. I've done, I've done a lot of cool Somewhere in Time, like a lot of cool songs that I would never get to teach to other people.
Right. Like, he's a cover band guy, and most people are just the main band guy.
Yeah, he's pulling obscure B-side stuff out. He's the guy when, like, Maiden tours just a matter of life and death when they did that. He's the guy that's stoked about that. He's that guy.
Oh man. Yes. That's awesome. So you've already said a little bit about, we both agreed on what we think on the first two albums. So initially when we kind of got connected, because we're going to go chronological order here through their catalog and anything you want to say. But the first thing you had told me was basically, I think Number of the Beast is the most overrated album by Iron Maiden. And I remember, you know, and like in my mind now, because it's been a while since we had that conversation, but in my mind, I'm like, I think, and on one hand, I can say, it's really overrated. And then on another hand, I can say, I think it's just rated well because it's a great album. So tell me what's your thought process when you say it's the most overrated Iron Maiden.
Okay, so I didn't believe that at first, and I can tell people are probably super mad right now listening to the podcast, but I'm going to explain it to you how it was explained to me. So that same student was like, we were talking about Number of the Beast. I'm like, it's a great record. He's like, to be honest with you, it's kind of three iconic songs and a bunch of filler. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm like Invaders and you know, 22 Acacia Avenue. And I'm like, name one song. He's like, really think about it. And he goes, here's this video from this guy that breaks it down. And it was this like gothy looking dude. And he was like super pretentious, but like, as he's making his point, he's not really wrong in a way. If you think about that album, there are filler on that record. If you take away those three songs, what do you have compared to like Seventh Son, compared to like Power Slave? You know what I mean? It's very interesting. But if you go through that track listing, right? I'm going to pull up the track listing right now. It's a really solid point, and it could be one of those things that those three songs are so iconic that it basically makes the rest of the record, you know, almost pale in comparison to it. Right? As weird as it sounds, but it was one of those things that got me thinking. Now, I still love The Prisoner, you know, I still love the record, right? But it made me think. It really did make me think. And is it the album cover, like we talked about with Killers, because that's such an iconic album cover too? Is it those three songs make it so important to people that they don't think about? So like, for example, Invaders is cool, but it could be a throwaway track. Journal of the Damned is cool, but...
I'd say that's more than cool. I think that's an amazing track.
Like, keep thinking. Yeah. The Prisoner. It's a cool song. They never played it hardly ever, right? That tells you something. 22 Acacia Avenue is your follow up to Charlotte the Harlot. It's a cool song. Number of the Beast is amazing. One of the best screams on record of all time. Love that tune. Run to the Hills, I could do with ever hearing again because they overplayed the heck out of it. I don't hate the song. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Gangland. I mean, right? And then you end it with one of the most, I think, one of the best Iron Maiden songs of all time, How Be Thy Name. But if you look at it that way, it got me thinking a little bit more.
I mean, I can understand thinking that, but like for me, I say, like, Invaders and Gangland obviously are the songs that even Steve and Bruce were talking down about. And I think Invaders is really good, but if your bar is hallowed, then obviously it's a lot, you know, it's a very high bar. But I'd say, I think Children of the Damned is amazing. I think Acacia Avenue, lyrics aside, Acacia Avenue musically is a really awesome
cool
song.
Cool stuff musically, I agree.
Yeah, Run to the Hills is awesome for me. I mean, I never get tired of that one. Number of the Beast is one I'm definitely tired of.
Okay.
but I can acknowledge it's a good song. Of course, Hallowed. The Prisoner, I think The Prisoner is a really epic song, but the chorus is just too major key happy for me.
Kind of like Can I Play with Madness?
1,000% yes.
Right.
Like you say Seventh Son a minute ago, and when you say how great it is, like to me, Can I Play with Madness, and I know I get a little bit of flack for saying this, The Prophecy is kind of cool. Can I Play with Madness is, I like it on the album. It's a terrible live song. Mm-hmm. Because they don't do gang vocals. They just need Bruce vocal songs. But, yeah, I mean, I you know, if someone wants to think Number of the Beast is overrated.
But think about this, though, right? We're big Iron Maiden fans, right?
Sure.
Let's just pull people that are like, okay, Iron Maiden fans, right? How many people are going to say Number of the Beast is their best record?
All of them.
And do you believe Number of the Beast is their best record?
No.
Exactly.
I don't.
Makes you think. I mean, have it in my top five.
I don't. I'm trying to think of what my top five is. It might be in my top five. I mean, I have a weird
top five, though. I mean, like, my top five is weird. I have, like, Peace of Mind in there. I have Brave New World. I have Seventh Son. I have Somewhere in Time. And then that fifth selection is so tricky because it's like Power Slave could be in there. The first Maiden record could be in there if the production was better. To be honest with you, some of the new stuff is really good too. You know, I like Senjutsu a lot, you know. So I'm not your typical Maiden fan in that sense, but I can easily put it out of my top five. I think it's a solid record, but that's what I mean by it being the most overrated Maiden record. When you ask people that are sort of into Maiden, they're like, sure, oh, Number of the Beast, it's amazing, it's not. And I'm like,
yeah, on that, in that way I can definitely agree.
Think it's a good record. I don't, it's something I will not listen to by any means, but like for me, but I always get flack for that because Seventh Son's my favorite Iron Maiden record. Somewhere in Time might be number two. Peace of Mind's three for me.
Peace of Mind probably, I don't know if Peace of Mind's in my top 10.
Wow, really?
You want to talk about an album that has some stink?
Still Live,
Die World, with Your
Revelations. Oh my God, there's some great Die with Your Boots On. There's some great
deals. Die with Your Boots On.
Really? Wow.
Musically, it's pretty good, but the chorus isn't very good. You know, the whole no point ask at the end of the song. You get to the song. There's this really cool musical section, and then where the song should end, they come back in with no point asking, and they go back into the big long chorus again. I'm like, okay, I don't really like the chorus that much. I think it's a little, I just don't like it. Like, Where Eagles Dare, obviously, really good. Revelations, really good. Flight of Icarus, really good. Die with Your Boots On, you know, way down. Trooper is an amazing, right, of course. Still Life.
You don't like Still Life?
You got that Nico intro, which ain't that great. The whole night. The Nightmares is okay. Then you got the goofy Bruce saying, "We'll give me peace of mind." You know, that's kind of,
yeah. Everybody in the '80s did something stupid like that. Like I was joking around with like Doc, and I was listening to Under Lock and Key one day on my bike ride, and I have a text conversation with a couple friends, and I go, "You know, on that record, Don, like, sounds like he's trying to seduce me." Like, so I call it Seductive Dawn on that record. So do you start thinking about, like, the Hunter and, like, he's whispering stuff. It's not love, all this other stuff. I'm always crashing my bike, laughing my ass off with it, just going, this is ridiculous. But everyone's doing something weird in the 80s, goofy like that. But, yeah, I knew I'd have a great conversation with you today, man, because I know you're such a big Iron Maiden fan, and I am too. And it's always cool to see different perspectives in a really intelligent way, not a yelling at each other way, nothing like that. Just a nice constructive conversation, you know what I mean?
Quest for Fire. I mean, come on. That's just that, like you think, this is what I always like. The same guy that wrote Phantom of the Opera, The Evil That Men Do, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, The Trooper, Hallowed Be Thy Name, tons of great songs. He also wrote Quest for Fire. It's
and there's no excuse back then too for our younger listeners. You know, back in the old days, a record had 8 songs, maybe 9, mm-hmm. right? Just the way the cassettes yeah. worked. You know, there's really yeah. no excuse if you're such a great band to not have 8 killers on a, no pun intended, on a record compared to, you yeah. know, like, you know, nowadays where you got 13, 14, 15 tracks, you're going to have some stinkers. I mean, no sure. one's going to write 15 great songs on a record.
I think some of Iron Maiden's best songs are on Peace of Mind, but I also think that I think definitely one of their absolute worst, which is Quest for Fire, is on there too. So, what about so talking of Peace of Mind, I mean, you think more highly of that album than I do.
I do. And it's one of those records that I think as you go back and re-listen to the catalog, that's another thing that this student does that he's kind of encouraging me to do, because I think it's interesting when you get older, and maybe you agree or disagree with me, or you just didn't give the record a chance, you listen with different ears, I think. Sure. So there's certain records that I listen to that just do not age well, right? And there's certain records that you kind of forgot were really good, or maybe you didn't give it a chance because you were listening to different music at the time. You know, like I think that's a big problem with the 90s in general. Like you had different styles moving throughout that decade where if Maiden put out a record, like I can't stand Fear of the Dark, but let's say Fear of the Dark was like Seventh Son quality. Am I going to really listen to it with those ears? Because I'm listening to like Alice in Chains Dirt and Pantera Wilderness by Power and like White Zombie. And I'm listening to Helmet, a lot of different stuff in that time period. Am I not going to listen to that with the ears of like, hey, I'm listening to Iron Maiden right now. Like that's where my focus has to be. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of a tricky thing when you're listening to music is you got to get into the mindset of, okay, this is what I'm listening to correctly give it a fair chance, right? And how many times sure. do you listen to a record more than once or twice? I think most people just listen a little bit and go, nah, it's not good, you know, instead of listening like 4 times, 5 times through to get that feel like, is the record going to be good or not?
I can say that's how I feel about the new Bruce album. The first time I listened, I was kind of like, okay. You know, and it's just the more listens that it gets better.
I need to listen to it because I was listening to it. I kind of felt the same way you did. And then that new Judas Priest record is just killing me on how amazing it is. And I just have not listened to anything new. I listened to the new Black Crowes record. I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Needs more guitar solos. Never went back to it. I just keep going back to that Priest record, that new one.
Okay. Sure. I haven't even heard it yet. I just haven't been ready to hear it yet. So how do you feel about Blaze Bailey and his time in the band?
Okay, I think a couple of things. Number one, wrong singer for that band. Because I don't even know if they auditioned him singing Iron Maiden songs, but there's not a lot of stuff he can cover per se. I think he's more on the Deano end of Maiden than sure. the Bruce end. I think that's Midlife Crisis Maiden, where a lot of bands that were in that time period didn't know what to do because you had grunge taken over, and then towards the tail end of grunge you had nu metal, and a lot of bands that were playing metal weren't playing guitar solos, and like, where do we go? You know, I mean, you know, the last two records Maiden does before Blaze is No Prayer, which I don't like whatsoever, which is the first time I saw Maiden too, by the way, and and then Fear the Dark. So you're going from those two things to the Blaze stuff. You're changing a singer. The singer doesn't sound, which I commend Steve for doing, getting a singer that is not, you know, not Dickinson Part Two. He could have got the singer from Helloween easily and just kind of continued on.
Right.
I deep dived those two records not long ago. I think there's songs that are good on both those records, but overall it just lacks. And I was really happy to hear Bruce back on Brave New World. That's kind of how I feel about those records.
The more I talk about it, the more I come up with theories. And one of my theories that I came up with was because famously Bruce and Steve don't have the greatest relationship.
Right.
I think they both have these alpha personalities. I'm the boss personalities. And I got to imagine that when Bruce left, that Steve was like, there's no way I'm going to get someone that sounds like Bruce, because if I do, Bruce is going to be sitting over there going, well, oh, of course he had to get someone that sounds just like good me. Point. And I think part of it was that there's a lot of things that happened in that time frame as well. You know, Steve getting a divorce, Martin Birch no longer, he retires from producing after Fear of the Dark. Which I don't think he did much producing on Fear of the Dark, if you listen to some of the garbage that made the right. album. The music change, you know, 92, that, like I said, that's when Dirt came out. That's when Vulgar Display came out. White Zombie, stuff like that was out. You know, the music scene was changing, so music was already taking that turn. And you add those three factors.
No Adrian.
Adrian's songwriting, I didn't realize before, but yeah, it's a huge.
Very important.
Huge thing. I think Yannick is a great songwriter as well, but you know, just starting out in the band, you got to kind of earn your stripes in the band. You're not just going to come in and go, okay, well, let me write seven songs.
Completely agree.
Yeah, but I think there was a lot going on, and of course, you know, Steve, so as a guitarist, someone who plays guitar in bands and teaches and things, how much would it have helped Blaze if they would have down-tuned a little bit? I always hear that said, you know, they could have down-tuned a little bit and it would have helped him, but what kind of difference would that have made for him and the band?
It's a great question, because as far as I know, Maiden hasn't down-tuned anything. There might have been one song they did a drop D in, but for the most part, they're standard. Could it have helped? Yeah. Would have been more in the where the times were at that period? Absolutely. It could have helped him for sure. You know, down tuning your instrument does help the singer for sure. It makes it a little easier to hit notes that they couldn't, you know, achieve. I think the smart thing would have been to down tune live.
That's what I mean.
Down tune live would have helped tremendously him hit or get him more of the ballpark for the Bruce stuff. Because I've heard some stuff live and it was very hard to handle with him trying to cover the Bruce stuff. And that was the thing where, you know, I was joking around with that student going, did they even audition him with Maiden songs? Like, were they thinking that maybe we're not going to play a bunch of Maiden stuff and we're going to like be Iron Maiden 2.0, you know, kind of like a Van Halen, Hagar thing, right? Where if you saw Van Halen with Sammy, they did only like two or three Van Halen songs with the classic raw songs.
Original.
They really tried to be like, this is the new direction, right? So, Maybe Steve was kind of thinking that as Blaze kept going in the band. I don't know. There's an interesting thought process. We obviously don't know because we weren't in the room, but speculation is always fun. And yes, downtuning live for sure, I think would have helped.
Yeah, I've always heard that. I saw an Iron Maiden tribute act a couple of years ago, and I was talking to the singer afterwards, and there was a note in Hallowed Be Thy Name or one of the songs that he hit. And I mean, I thought, wow, Bruce can't even hit that like that. And I remember I was talking to him. I said, dude, and I said, you did that better than Bruce does. And he goes, well, we're tuned half a step down. And he kind of was trying to explain to me from the perspective of someone that really knows a lot about it. And I just was like, I can talk a little tiny bit, but what you're saying doesn't make sense. But I kind of get it. So I've always heard, you know, they never would tune down with Blaze. And they were like, I saw a version of Blaze doing Wasted Years once.
Right.
And it sounded really good, but obviously it was tuned down. And I was like, man, they could have just changed some of these things up and helped them. But it makes you wonder, did Steve think about the perspective of how are these old songs going to sound live?
And Steve's really the leader, right? You know what I mean? And especially with Bruce out of the band, Steve is you know, having more control than ever in terms of that. And being the new guy, I've been the new guy in bands before and stuff. It is that weird, like trying to, you know, especially if you're with people that have been playing together for four albums, five albums, six albums, it's like, where do you find your space? You know, it's tricky, and you don't feel like you have a voice, you know, and you feel like if you're using too much of your voice, like, is that your ticket out of the band, you know, like, or if your voice and your ideas don't mesh with the band, then it's like, well, am I going to ever be able to write anything? And like, if you go on to the aspect of the financial situation of bands, if you're not getting writing credits, you're losing out on a lot of money. You know what I mean? So as much as we love just listening to music, there is the business aspect of it. You know, that's why so many people wanted their name on records, or certain bands would split evenly, even with the drummer. Mm-hmm. Like I'm talking like my Van Halen, for example, their first contract, it was split evenly. And Ed would write mostly all the music with Roth, you know what I mean? And the other two guys still got, you know, equal percentage. You got to think that way too. Is he forcing stuff too much because he really wants to get writing credits on these records? Because think about like the old the bands that Metallica would cover, like Budgie and those bands. I would hear stories like, hey, I bought a house because of the royalties I got from them covering, you know, one of our songs on these things. So it's something to think about there too. There's so much pressure. I mean, how do you replace Bruce? Like, you're not going to get a fair shake. I mean, right off the bat, they're going to hear him sing and be like, nope, that's not Bruce. Nope. You know, and do they really get a fair shot as a band? You know, that's another thing that's tricky. Mm-hmm. Going back, I liked them a little bit more than when I first heard them. I can say that much.
Yeah. Well, and what you said about getting a fair shake, and people would always say, like you said, a lot of the – there was a rumor back then, hey, that they might get Michael Kiske from Halloween. Judas Priest went and got a clone. The story is so funny because they go get a clone. He kills it live. Everyone's still like, hey, he's not Rob Halford. Then they go record albums that don't sound anything like, if they would have done a Painkiller style album with Ripper, I think it would have done okay. But then they go and they try to do like these nu metal albums or whatever they did that nobody likes or very few like. And so I think it was kind of a no-win situation for Blaze regardless. But like it's like anyone has said, there's no way he was going to turn the job down.
Right, exactly. I mean, you'd be crazy to do that, right?
So let me ask you this. Okay, so obviously most people would say from Number of the Beast, it was a huge jump from Killers. You know, songs, music, style, obviously vocalists. Yes. You go to Peace of Mind, it's still moving in a little different direction, you know? Same producer, sounds a little different. You go to Power Slave. Kind of, I would say, same kind of direction. You know, they're still moving up. Nothing's really changing. Sound-wise, it's a little different. but so where I was going here, though, here's where I was getting to. Because all of these, okay, and when I say nothing's changing, obviously they're progressing, but it's still two regular guitars, a bass guitar, drums, and vocals. Then you get to Somewhere in Time. So, if you will, going from Peace of Mind, Power Slave, and then hitting Somewhere in Time as a guitar player, just your perspective on, because obviously the change in sound on Somewhere in Time.
Some of my favorite guitar stuff that Maiden does is on Power Slave. And the reason why is use two scales, and if you're not a guitar player, you won't get this, but you will if you're listening to the podcast and you're a guitar player. They use a lot of Phrygian and a lot of harmonic minor. And what that does to that record is it makes the album cover look like what you hear. The very Egyptian sounding scales. So when you hear Power Slave, you can feel that. There's a lot of neat stuff on that record. I think guitar wise, it's some really, really solid stuff. Like, you know, 2 Minutes to Midnight, Aces High. There's great stuff on that record. When they go to Somewhere in Time, this is where I think you get the first big divide between Maiden fans, because you get the keyboards, right? You know, and then you get keyboards on Seventh Son, but you can tell they're dialed back a bit. But the keyboards don't bother me on either one of those records because I think the songwriting is just amazing. You're also getting into more digital sounding Maiden, where like effects processors on amplifiers and things like that, it's got a very, you can feel that shift. That Van Halen record does the same thing, 5150, the first record without Roth. It's, and I don't care for the production of it, but Ed's tone is very, very digitized. It's not the Marshall, you know, through the Frankenstrat anymore. You can definitely hear a lot of different sounds. And I think that was a big shock for Maiden fans too, but I think the songs are great on that record. I mean, I think, and I'll probably get flamed for this, but I think Somewhere in Time and Seventh Son is like peak Maiden in terms of songwriting. I feel like that those two records are just, you can take two songs off those two records and you have just, the rest of the songs are just amazing. to me personally. And I had heard a little bit of Somewhere in Time in that time period, right? Not much of it at all. Seventh Son, obviously, I love. The only song I don't like on Seventh Son is Can I Play with Madness, because I don't feel like it fits the record. I love the ending of the prophecy, being a guitar teacher, a guitar player. I think the end of the prophecy is absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah, it's very pretty.
I feel like the record flows really well, too. Like, I feel like it does feel like a concept record. And I think that's where you had that first divide. But I think, you know, for a guy like me who came in a little bit late, and I had a friend on the podcast, we were talking about new Metallica compared to old Metallica. Here's the weird thing, right? Okay. Depending on where you come in, depending on your age, that's where you're the most receptive to that. So I've had people go, oh, Load's amazing by Metallica. I'm like, you might want to go back a couple albums, you know? but when this person made their point, it was like, I can see why they liked Load if that's their introduction to Metallica.
Right.
And then this person can go back and they like the old stuff too.
Sure.
I think it's, you know, when you're younger, it's where you're most impressionable with music. All your buddies are your trading tapes. You know, people are telling you about all these other bands. When you get to college, it's like that's ramped up too. And then when you get out of college, you don't hear about it as much. And the way music's changed nowadays, everything's digital. There's so much competition. I had Dave Rude from Tesla on my show the other week. And he was saying there's like 40,000 songs a day that get put up on streaming.
Wow.
How do you compete against that? It's insane. There's records I don't even know that came out. And back in the old days, you knew when records were coming out.
Yeah.
You know, so I think all of those things, you know, really do make a difference. So I'm 13. So I'm 12, I think, when Somewhere in Time comes out. I'm 13 and a half, almost 14 when Seventh Son comes out.
Okay.
That's super impressionable for me. I'm just starting to play guitar. Like, things are starting to sound different. When you play an instrument, within like the first year or two, when you play an instrument, you hear music differently than when you hear it as a non-musician. Pop things just pop out at you a lot more, like vocal harmonies, bass lines. Like, I love Randy Rhoads and the Ozzy era with Randy, but I like Bob Daisley's bass playing so much.
Oh, yeah, he's good.
Where I didn't notice it when I was a kid. I just heard Randy's guitar and I didn't realize without Bob Daisley, that band doesn't go where that band goes.
Oh, yeah.
This is God's honest truth. He wrote a lot of those tunes. And he arranged a lot of those tunes with Randy. You take Bob out of that equation, that record isn't as good as it is.
Oh, yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree.
So, that's how I feel about those records. I mean, you know, Somewhere in Time, I think, is just such a great record. I mean, Adrian plays his ass off on that record. Dave plays great. The whole band's firing at all cylinders. I think Nico's an important, you know, piece of that band moving forward, too. He doesn't get talked about a lot, but I think, you know, Clive was great, but I think Nico added that different sound to keep going into that direction. Nico's more progressive.
He is.
Clive was more punk rock drummer. That's going to take an effect the more Nico feels comfortable in Maiden. So I think that's where that progression keeps going up. They're trying different things songwriting wise that they're not doing, kind of like the newer Maiden is like prog Maiden.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
In a way.
Absolutely.
And that did not exist until about Somewhere in Time, Seventh Son, and then they made that big back pedal. No Prayer sounded like AC/DC outtakes with Bruce singing, you know, a lot of those tunes, you know, and then like they don't know what they're. You can tell, like, as a guy that's played in bands and breaks down songs for a living, you can kind of tell. I can almost feel where the energy is. You can tell by somewhere in Seventh Son, right in that area after they get to No Prayer, you can tell Bruce isn't happy. To the point where he's plotting his exit. You can tell. You can listen to those records and go, how do we go from such an iconic record in Seventh Son to go to No Prayer? That's a colossal drop-off, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, I've heard things where they said, hey, what they were trying to do was go back to the rawness of Killers, like, type sound.
Sure.
They basically went back to the... See, that's... It's funny, too, because Adrian came in on the rawness of Killers... And when they were going to go back to the rawness of Killers, he left, you know?
Yep.
He was just like, no, we're moving in a direction and I like that direction and I don't want to go that direction. I'm like you though. I came in like the first new album was Somewhere in Time for me. So when Caught Somewhere in Time kicks in, I mean, it's just a heavy song, whether it's Absolutely. Got synthesized guitar solos or whatever, it didn't matter. It was like, are the songs good? And
they are.
There's a song or so on there that I'm not a huge fan of. But still, they're not terrible songs. So, and the same with Seventh Son. Can I Play With Madness? I like it as just a studio track. It's okay. But yeah, it doesn't fit the album quite like everything else. And it's definitely a step below just about every other song on the album. And so obviously you got to the No Prayer era. That was your first tour. So when you saw the tour, who did you see? Well, who did you see with them? What did you think of the show?
I saw Anthrax was the opener. Ooh. On the Persistence of Time record.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because when I saw it, it was right around the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
So Bruce actually flew an American flag.
Okay. Okay.
During the Trooper.
Okay. I don't remember that. I saw the tour, yeah. But I don't remember that.
Yeah, and I don't know if it was just because of that little time period where I saw it, where it was like, because you know the Gulf War didn't last long. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was the deal. Didn't have the best seats. Saw it at the Meadowlands. Brendan Byrne Arena.
Okay.
It was one of the first shows I had gone to. I had seen Whitesnake with Vi and Faster Pussycat was the first show I saw. And then I seemed to see almost everything that year after.
Right.
So that Maiden show might have been the second or third show I ever saw in my life. So the excitement of being at a concert was just, I loved the show. I remember being so excited about the show. I don't remember hardly anything about it. I remember being far away. Yeah. I remember Anthrax was great. I remember Maiden was great. But I don't remember too much after that, unfortunately. But I've seen Maiden probably 6 or 7 times since.
Okay.
And
okay.
I've seen them. I've seen second row. I saw, it was funny. I was listening to the show, one of the back episodes where I was at the Ozfest with Sabbath about a day or two before the egg incident.
Oh man. Yeah.
Yeah. Right before that. And I had second row, dude. And I'm telling you right now, I tell all my friends, I'm like, I was 13 years old at that concert. Like I just forgot what age I was. I was on Yannick's side, which was kind of a bummer because his stage volume is so unbelievably loud.
Really?
Okay. It was so hard for me to like, I had to focus super hard on like the songs because yeah. He was so loud and he's not the tightest guitar player live.
Right.
I think they put him down the mix pretty well. And then seeing Tony Iommi on that side of the stage for Sabbath right after that was,
yeah.
And they played cool. That was the one, I believe that show is when they were doing nothing but the first four records for the most part.
Okay. Yeah. That was the, I can't remember what they called it, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It was great. And that was a great show. So yeah, that first show with Maiden was awesome. And I've seen him a bunch of times since. But just getting to see him on that Ozfest show, being second row.
That's
completely on accident because the show got canceled. We were going to. And this is when we used Craigslist, when Craigslist was like a first thing.
Yeah.
And someone sold us second row seats for like $120.
Oh, man. That's.
And we're like, yeah, we're going. We're doing this. And it was amazing. So that's what I remember from the first show. I wish I remembered more, but I mean, that was what, 32, 33 years ago?
Yeah.
Something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
When's the last time you've seen Maiden live?
That's a really good question. Man, I think it was Coheed and Cambria was opening up for them. And it was, I think it was during when they were doing the Seventh Son Power Slave kind of Grace Hitch thing. That's the last time I seen them.
Yeah, that's who I saw, Coheed and Cambria opening. And that was in on, wait, was that? It wasn't Book of Souls. It would have been Maiden England.
Yeah. I didn't have. I've not seen them on any of the newer records, unfortunately. I am going to see them this year. We have this thing called Aftershock.
Yeah.
Out here that I'm gonna go see them. It's like them and Anthrax again, which cracks me up.
Oh, cool.
Body Count's playing. I have to see Body Count. And there's one other band I was really excited about seeing, but there's like four. Oh, and Priest.
Oh, so cool.
There's four killer bands on that. So I'm just gonna go the one day. We were going to go see them in Vegas. And here's the other thing that's crazy about it. Like, they were given tickets away, you know, 10, 15 years ago to Maiden, right?
Yeah.
Like, we tried to get tickets for Vegas, and a bunch of my old college buddies get together and go. And, like, the show was pretty much sold out within, like, 10 minutes of us trying to buy the tickets. I could not believe it.
I think the problem nowadays is you got all the bots. People are using the little bots and the computerized programs to buy all the tickets up, and then you go anywhere else and you can find it. But now the tickets are double, triple, quadruple the price, and it ruins the experience of being young. And like we had Sears is where the Ticketmaster was here, and we would go to the mall and we would kind of get there at, you know, 4 in the morning.
Yeah,
and you'd wait until 10 in the morning to get your whatever the best seat they offered you. You weren't going, no. Let me. Okay, show me the map and let me pick my seat. It wasn't none of that. It was like, okay, give me 2 for Iron Maiden. Okay, here you go. Oh, cool. Exactly. 16th row. Great. You know.
I miss those days, man. There's definitely some camp out shows for sure for me too. That's a bummer, man, because it kept the playing field even.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's what I hate nowadays is the playing field isn't even. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'd love for the, you know, and I mean, dude, back then it was what, 16, 18, 20 bucks?
My first Maiden show, I saw Maiden Seventh Son tour. I was 16th row. And I think my tickets were $16.50 face value, and 16th row back then was 16th row. It wasn't like now where you've got a 10-foot barrier in between the band. I went and saw Kiss with my daughter a few years back because I was like, last time they're coming through, let me take her and see the big show. And we're going to get – and I spent way more money than I've ever spent on seats. And I think we were about 16th row. And I thought, man, this is going to be so awesome. And when we got up there and I looked and I thought, it feels like we're 40 rows back, not, and it was kind of a bummer, but so
definitely different, definitely different.
So they move into the No Prayer, Fear of the Dark era, which is okay. Now you said you didn't like No Prayer. Do you think No Prayer is better than Fear of the Dark or worse?
I, you know, what's kind of funny. No Prayer is not as bad as I realized. Re-listening to it, mm-hmm. It's still not good for me, but and I'm like that weirdo that like I don't mind Tail Gunner. I think Tail Gunner is kind of a cool song, but there's a lot of cheesy lyric stuff on that record. It's too kind of poppy for me.
Okay,
they're not doing what I always joke around. I'm like, you know, don't put Slayer in my AC/DC.
Sure,
you know what
sure.
I mean? Like I want to know what I'm getting. Like I like AC/DC because I always know what it's going to sound like. And for that record, I feel like I don't know what they were trying to figure out. Yeah. So it's one of those records. Like, and I, like I said, I saw the tour, and I went back and looked at set lists and stuff to see what they did play to refresh my memory and stuff. But yeah, it's just I don't know. It was kind of like I feel like it was especially trying to follow Seventh Son for me. That's a hard follow, you know.
Yeah,
it's I don't think you're following it no matter what. I think, and I tell some friends, Brave New World to me feels like what the follow up should have been to Seventh Son.
I've heard that for sure before. Yeah, it makes sense.
You know what I mean? That's the progression they should have gone. But yet again, we talk about that time period, man. Like, I'm into the Chili Peppers, Mother's Milk, you know, I'm into Jane's Addiction. I'm into so much stuff. And then I'm hearing Bring Your Daughter to the Slaughter. And by the way, that song is better on the Nightmare on Elm Street soundtrack.
Yeah. It's got the big chorus.
It's better. It sounds better. It sounds produced better. But yeah, I don't know. I was in such a different time space in my life. I'm basically almost a freshman in college, so I'm not in that same. I mean, I'm discovering Corrosion of Conformity, you know, Rage Against the Machine, Pearl Jam, Mother Love Bone. There's so many different things I'm listening to. So Maiden's not like in my kind of in my line sight, even though the guitar player in my band at the time was a huge Maiden fan.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was still there. I still have a dub copy of Fear of the Dark somewhere. So. That's kind of funny, but yeah, they lost me a little bit in that time period, and they definitely got me back for Brave New World for sure.
Yeah, and that's you said something that it was gonna bounce off of when you said about the time frame and the bands, and but the time frame of No Prayer, Fear of the Dark, then you got the Blaze albums,
right?
No, my wording. My wife just walked in the room, so it threw me off. Brave New World does seem like a good follow-up, and I've kind of always thought that, to me, Fear of the Dark is the worst Iron Maiden album ever. Like, especially you look at the circumstances that came with it too. Like, it's got Bruce on it, so already your expectation for a Bruce album is higher. Like the Blaze albums, people go, oh, well, I don't like these as much. I like the Blaze albums. I think as a, but he's way better as a solo artist. by himself than he is with Maiden. Because Steve really, what he did was take this guy with a huge personality and all this charisma and basically say, no, you're going to get on stage, you're going to be serious, you're not going to be acting crazy, whatever. But whenever all that's over, Brave New World comes back and you get an album that's just... To me, I'll tell you, I haven't told you what my number one album is. I'll say this, that might surprise you. We haven't got to it yet. But
okay.
Brave New World's my number two. So
I love that. I love that record, man. You're not going to get a complaint
right.
from me about that record at all. That I remember teaching Wicker Man.
Yeah.
And I did not hear anything from that record. And the student brought it in. And I'm like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got to listen to this record now. Like, it instantly got me back into Maiden. Not that it was ever out of Maiden.
Sure.
It was just, that was like, okay. Because you know how hard it is for a band that's been around for a while to, like, put out a really solid record. It's a lot of bands try and they fail. And it's just hard because I was joking around, like, you know, my buddy says, well, Megadeth still puts out good records because Dave's still mad. You know?
Yeah.
You know? And then when you think about, like, Metallica, it's like, what does Metallica have to be mad about anymore? You know
right.
what I mean?
It's
you got dudes in their late 50s, early 60s, like trying to figure out where they kind of fit still.
Mm-hmm.
And it just does, like, 72 seasons just miss for me. I'm that guy that's like, every time a Metallica album comes out, I give it a listen and just go, okay, come on, guys. Maybe this is the time, you know? And like, no, it's not the time. And it's just every record happens. And,
sure.
But yeah, I know what you mean. That record, oh my God, it's such a great. I think the second song I heard off that record was Dream of Mirrors.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. And then I heard Brave New World. I was like, oh my God. And just, I don't really think there's hardly anything bad on that record, to be honest with you.
I think that album is, well, it's my number two. And it could very easily be, it could swap around. I recently ranked every Iron Maiden song. It's impossible to do.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's impossible, but I just came up with a couple of ways and I thought, I'll go through the albums and I'll rank the songs and I'll do it different ways and just see what I come up with. I did three different ways and then I just averaged all three of them together and I said, this will be it. And but Brave New World songs, every one of them were, like, I remember I was doing it. I did an episode. I haven't released it yet. But when my friend, as soon as I said the first song, which I think might have been a Mercenary, might have been the lowest ranked song from that album. And he was like, that's your first Brave New World. I've been waiting to see, because he's trying to figure out how, because then I also ranked the albums as well, which I haven't recorded an episode with that. But that's very, it's impossible to do, because as soon as I start looking back, I'm like, no, that should be higher. That should be lower. And but
I commend you for even trying.
I thought about it for a long time, but then I finally did it. So it's interesting. So what do you think of the progression? Because to me, it's like a Brave New World is kind of the debut album again. It's the debut album by Iron Maiden again. Now your sophomore album, which is the one they say you've had your whole you've had your whole life to record your debut album. Now you're under the pressure of, again, okay, we got to record another album in a year or two after touring and doing all that with it. So what are your thoughts on the way Dance of Death came out?
Dance of Death has one of my favorite Iron Maiden songs on it. Passchendaele.
Of course.
Absolutely love that song.
Yeah.
I like Dance of Death. I think there's some great tunes. This is where we go into mostly the single that gets released is not representative of what the record's going to sound like, right? I don't know why they do that, but
I know.
I like Rainmaker. I like No More Lies. I mean, I like the record, but yet again, you're following up a near perfect record, and it's just not going to, it's not going to fare well for them. But I liked it. I didn't lose interest. I don't know, maybe a 6 out of 10, somewhere in that range, maybe 7 out of 10, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, that first song, one of my co-hosts, he didn't listen to the album for like 20 years. He was like, I played that, and I just said, if this is the best they got, they need to hang it up. But then he liked the subsequent albums.
Yeah.
But it was like that one song, it just, and plus, that album cover is just hideous, you know? It's
a
mess.
Well, that was the different guy that did it, right? And then, like, I read something crazy about, like, what the album cover was supposed to look like, and then it was all this digital art stuff they were doing with it, and it was just, you know, that was abysmal, unfortunately.
I think they basically presented him with Eddie, and then they came in and did all the digital stuff, and the guy literally said, take my name off of that when you release it. I don't want to be associated. I'm like, wow, because that would be a big thing to say, hey, yo, I did the most recent Iron Maiden album, you know?
Well, if he could get a ton of cred on it, but then he knows, like, nah, this didn't come out the way I was hoping it would.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think, Matter of Life and Death?
Okay, I this is going to sound crazy. Is that your pick for number one?
That's it. That's my number one.
I had a feeling. I think that record is a record that you cannot listen to unless you listen to it from front to back. You know, I feel like that record is just, you can't just go, oh, I'm going to listen to Brighter Than a Thousand Suns, or I'm going to listen to The Longest Day. Like, you have to start from the top. You can even start on These Colors Don't Run, you know what I mean? Because Different World, eh. But, like, that record is just, I really wanted to see that tour.
Oh, I'm so mad I didn't want to see that.
I wanted to see them play that record from front to back. I think it was a really nice bounce back from Dance to Death, even though I like Dance to Death.
Yeah.
It's just, there's some really interesting stuff. It's where you see Maiden start really going proggy.
Really, yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think Bruce is great on it. It's a great record. It's one of those ones, like I said, I did a deep dive on all the Maiden records. And most of that deep dive was riding my bike, just sure, grabbing 15, 20 miles on my bike, biking with headphones.
Yeah.
And that record just kept surprising me on how really good it was compared to everything else I was listening to that week, where it was just nothing but the Maiden catalog. Yeah, I had a feeling you were going to tell me that was your number one, but you said we hadn't mentioned it yet.
I feel like that album is the most, it's just the most cohesive album. You hit start, and it's not a concept album, but it's very themed. The lyrics are very dark. It's war related. It's all things about the human,
religion too. There's a religion vibe on it too.
Yeah. Yep. And how they all play together. And it's lyrically, musically, Bruce's vocals, everything on that album is just strong and well done. And to me, that one, I think I said the two albums that are the most cohesive to me are that one and Power Slave. Like, they sound like, every song sounds like it fits perfectly. Nothing's out of place. Whereas, like Seventh Son's an amazing album, but then, Can I Play With Madness is in there too. So, I love that album. I had a downtime from Iron Maiden where I liked them, but I just didn't listen. I wasn't following them anymore. And that was the album that I think when I heard it, I was just like, whoa, I loved it from the very beginning. So,
And people love it or hate it. You ever notice that?
It's bizarre. Yeah.
There's no in between on that record. It's either like, this is an awful record, or this is amazing. It's pretty wild when you think about that record in that sense.
Now, you mentioned that it needed to be listened to in full. I'm a little older than you. I can tell just by how old you were when Seventh Son came out. But I don't really like to listen to music unless it's just like, when I play music, I just pretty much want to put the album on and just listen. Now, I might not always make it through. I might be on a car ride and have to stop and turn it off or whatever and pick it up later.
Sure.
But are you a kind of person that feels like, I want to make playlists and things like that? Or do you want to just, are you more of an album guy?
I will make playlists on bands that I don't think have great albums, but their songs I really dig on each album.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
I'll do that. Like Deftones would be an example of that. Or I'm not a big Motley Crue fan, but I would definitely do that with Motley Crue. I feel like Motley Crue has like three good songs on every record. I mean, the early stuff's pretty solid, but I think there's a lot of misses. But yes, I like listening to records like Diary of a Madman.
Ooh, yeah.
I can listen to that record front to back. Yeah. Def Leppard's High and Dry, another one I can listen to front to back. AC/DC Highway to Hell, Alice in Chains Dirt. Pearl Jam Versus, Live at the Fillmore East, Allman Brothers. I mean, there's definitely records I can listen to front to back. And it just depends. You know, it depends on the artist. And you know, because there's, you know, you have certain, Black Sabbath is another one I can do that with. I'm a huge Black Sabbath fan. And I can do that up to about Technical Ecstasy. then the wheels kind of fall off for me there.
Yeah.
But I can listen to Sabotage and Sabbath by Sabbath, which I think is their peak.
That's so good. Records. I love that's my favorite one. Yeah.
Just amazing. But yeah, I can I'm an album guy for sure.
Okay. So for sure. So going from now, this is an interesting one because what you said about A Matter of Life and Death is the way a lot of people are about the follow-up, Final Frontier. Where do you fall on that?
Hated it, re-listened to it, didn't think it was as bad as I thought it was.
Okay, yeah.
That's where I'm at with it.
I think two songs in a row on that album are like I'm really coming around more and more and more and more over the years. But Talisman and Starblind back to back. I mean, I don't know if it's about as good as Iron Maiden gets back to back. And my favorite on the album is the Talisman. And the fact that it's on Rock and En Vivo and mm-hmm. it's performed live, it's incredible. I highly recommend that song.
Let me ask you this, because you got me thinking about something.
Okay.
Did you like when Bruce covered Blaze songs, and were you surprised that they were covering those songs live?
I'll tell you what, I love that they did that. I hate that Judas Priest won't touch the Ripper songs, because it's like you're denying that your history existed. I love that Maiden did it, because they said, we believe in everything we've ever done. I think that's kind of Priest's way of saying we don't really believe in that. And I honestly think Bruce does everything better than Paul,
right.
Other than maybe Innocent Exile, which he only sang once or twice. He did it better than Blaze too. I mean, Sign of the Cross is better. Lord of the Flies is so much better because Bruce has such a higher octave. I like the songs right. with Blaze, but yeah, I love that they continued doing those songs. I love, love, love that. I love it.
Now, how much more would you like the second Blaze record if it was Bruce singing it? Because I hear a decent amount of Brave New World vibe on that second Blaze record the more I listen to it.
I don't know. I mean, I guess I can say this. I like Blaze, but Bruce is the singer of Iron Maiden. He's the voice of Iron Maiden. Yep. I probably would have liked it better. Part of me does wish, though, that Blaze would have had one more album, because his first album, Silicon Messiah, that he did outside of Maiden, is amazing. And I interviewed him once, and he said half of those songs were written for the next Maiden album. And
interesting.
Half of the songs on Brave New World were written with Blaze and Steve together. You know, they bought Blaze out of it and, you know, gave money to get his career going or whatever. So I'm curious to see, because I feel like the first album with Blaze was really, you know, it was where Steve was in his life. It was a dark album. The next right. album, you start off with Future Real, and it, you know, there's songs in there that kind of get back to what Maiden did. There's some gallop. There's some just, you know, a little bit of dual lead. It wasn't well produced. I feel like they dropped the ball on it, but I just kind of wonder where it would have went. But yeah, anything with Bruce, I'm going to probably like better than anything else.
And I just wonder it, because that was the big takeaway I got from listening to the second record with Blaze, is that I could hear some of these songs sounding like they could have been Brave New World tunes. And that made me start thinking, like, which you just confirmed for me, that they saved some songs
yeah.
for Brave New World, and you just confirmed it. So that's pretty neat that I got that little tidbit today.
Yeah,
It's surprising. It's you're right with the production. The production isn't as good as it could have been, but I also think it's that time period, man. You got to remember, mid to late 90s, you know, there's a lot of dry snares, a lot of dry drum kits. There's not a lot of reverb on things. That was the big sound, like, you know, your System of a Down, those type of bands. So, you know, you're not going to get the production of a regular Maiden record like you'd like, and then we re-got that on Brave New World.
There's a little rumor. It's a very small rumor that I've heard. I don't know if there's any truth to it, but if you go listen to Virtual 11 with this in mind, it might change the way you think about it. There's a rumor, two rumors. Well, the first one is that Nico did not play on that album.
Interesting.
The second one is that Steve played on that album.
Steve played drums on that album?
Because the drums are pretty basic. You know, if you listen to Nico in the past, there's a lot of technical things he does. The only song that has a little bit of that is The Clansman. Everything else is pretty simple, and I'm like, I never even thought about it till I heard it, and I listened again, and I was like, yeah, this doesn't sound like Nico playing. So
you know where you could tell too is the fluctuation of time. Nico seems to rush stuff, especially live.
Yeah, he does.
That would be interesting to listen to too. Wow. Yeah. That's, well, you're gonna make me listen to that record again.
There you
now.
Go. So okay, so what's your thoughts on, you know, from Final Frontier to Book of Souls?
Okay. Final Frontier, I liked better when I heard it the second time through. I didn't like it in the beginning. Book of Souls, I really, really dug when I first heard it. And then it kind of wore off on me a little bit when I revisited it.
Yeah.
But I think there's some great songs. The one I wanted to hear so bad, because I had been hearing rumors and all this other stuff, I wanted to hear how they pulled off Empire of the Clouds.
Okay.
Because an 18-minute song to me is very... It's either going to be a long jammy section, or you're very confident in your ability to try to write an 18-minute song that doesn't, like, that warrants you to write one, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And I honestly think, and who knows, I don't really know how many people feel about this tune. I think it's a really damn brilliant song. I think I'm trying to think, because Bruce wrote that song all himself,
yeah,
from what I remember. It's very thematic. Like, when you listen to it, it's like I can picture the ship going down in certain parts. I can picture the fear of, like, something's not going right with the pilots. I mean, there's so much stuff I can picture from listening to it.
Yeah.
It's a journey. It's one of those tunes where you got to – I think that's one of those tunes you just got to listen to at home, yeah, you know, where you're just kind of hanging out and just take it all in.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Book of Souls I think is real – another nice solid going back up,
yeah,
right, and then after that going into, because Senjutsu is the next record after that.
Yeah,
I like Senjutsu. I thought it was a cool record. I thought there was a lot of things they did that I thought were really, really cool. Yet again, didn't really care for the single, but that par for the course. And then after that,
same,
like,
here.
I enjoyed it. I think Maiden is going in the direction that I'm really happy they're going in. And honestly, man, for the age that they're at,
yeah,
they're putting good quality stuff out there. I know people that won't even listen to the new Maiden stuff and oh, blah, 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 whatever.
Sure.
And I had a friend on my show who said, are you really a fan if you don't listen to every record they put out to really give it, like, a chance? Are you really a fan? Like, and he was using Queensryche as an example. He's like, are you really a fan of the band Queensryche if you don't listen to the Todd stuff? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to miss stuff. Like, he swears by some of the stuff. So it's some of the greatest, the newer stuff is some of the greatest stuff they put out.
Yeah.
And he's like a big The Warning fan and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it got me thinking. I'm like, you know, you bring up a great point, because how can you really be a fan of a band if you say, well, I haven't listened to this album or that. I haven't listened to anything they've done since they got back together with Bruce. It's like, well, then you're a fan of a part of that band,
yeah,
not the whole band. You cannot like stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're not giving stuff a chance, I think you miss out. And I think the people that are not listening to the newer Maiden stuff are missing out on some high-quality stuff from a band,
yeah,
that is up in age. Here's the other thing to think about, right, Steve? Check this out. When we're listening to, you know, Seventh Son and we're young, you know, we're in our teens, mm-hmm, are you thinking this band is going to be putting out records 35 years later?
No, I'm not even thinking about it. I'm not even thinking.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, if you go back in time, you know, no pun intended, right? And you brought this record to your 14, 15, 16-year-old self, like, you'd probably go, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you think about some other bands that have not put out good quality stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I kudos to them. I think they know what the fans like. I think they know how to stay in their lane, per se, of what, like, how they write the best.
Yeah.
But still kind of break ground. I don't know. I like a lot of the new stuff, and Senjutsu was one that I was pleasantly surprised that was kind of on that Book of Souls vibe, where it's like, okay,
yeah,
there's,
yeah,
two really good solid albums in a row, which I didn't feel like they had, like, 2.0,
yeah,
Bruce, you,
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I gotcha.
I feel like these two records were like, yeah, you guys got it right two times in a row.
I'll say that I want to address two things you said real quick here.
Sure.
One, when someone says they're a fan of a band, it's really like, in one hand, I understand what your friend is saying. Like, can you really? But then at the same time, I feel like you could take a person that's a fan of, like me. I would never call myself a Motley Crue fan, but I like two albums and that's it.
Right.
I think it's hard to kind of say along the lines of what a fan is, how you define it, but I kind of understand it and think, I always, because I have a line of, like, there's a lot of classic era fans of Maiden. Everybody, like I told you earlier, everybody likes the old stuff. You know, you never hear anyone that goes, oh, I love the post-2000 era, and I'm not into that old stuff. No one says that.
No one.
But, so it's kind of a line to be on there, but I can see what he's saying. Second thing I want to address is, yes, the four albums that Queensrÿche has done with Todd LaToy are amazing. I'll say Condition Human, the second one they did with him, it's top three probably Queensrÿche albums for me, and I like everything, and this is including The Warning, Operation Mindcrime, Promised Land, all this. I mean, Condition Human is an amazing album. Their new album, everything's good.
Can I throw something at you?
Yeah.
I had this little theory. I like throwing these wacky things out.
Yeah.
I want to ask you first, what's your favorite Queensrÿche album?
That's tough, you know. I mean, I'll just name four right off the bat, that because without
okay,
I'd say Warning, Mind Crime, Promised Land, Condition Human.
Okay, cool. Now here's my next thought to put into your head. I think Empire was the first black album.
Was the first?
I think it was the black album before Metallica black album.
Hmm.
If you think of how different that record is from Mindcrime,
very much
it's still going in that direction where Queensrÿche fans can like it, but now you're getting the cheerleaders and other people liking that record more. You have Silent Lucidity. They're kind of going in that Pink Floyd direction, but like still Queensrÿche-ish.
I can definitely see that. Yeah, I can see that.
I feel like that's the first black album, because I feel like every metal band in that time period had a black album. And it's blamed on Metallica.
Interesting.
You think about like Countdown to Extinction, that Testament record, Suicidal. Oh,
yeah.
Like a black record. Like, you're starting to see, like, oh, that's the direction we're kind of supposed to go.
Sure.
I think Queensrÿche was the first.
That's
band
an
that
interesting.
Did that.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you know, because music was swaying that way, and Metallica did it. I'm a way bigger Megadeth fan. Like, to me, The Sick, the Dying, and the Dead is an amazing album. Metallica hasn't touched that for probably since Injustice for All, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But and I like Load and Reload. I do like those, even though they're way different. But every band kind of followed Metallica. Megadeth for a while seemed like they were on the heels of Metallica, trying to catch Metallica. So when the Black album came out, yeah, Countdown kind of followed along, and it was, and they're both really good albums. I mean, I like Megadeth way more. So I think Countdown's a lot better album than the Black album. It's just that
I agree.
Black album sold about 5,000 times the amount that, you know.
The other thing you have to think about too is, like, I don't think any of those bands knew where the ship was continuing to go.
Absolutely.
After that big record, right? Where they're like, oh God, where are we going now?
Right, right.
You know, and I think, you know, another thing that hurt some of those bands, like Metallica went 5 years between Black and Load, and you can kind of tell there's a big musical landscape difference in 5 years.
Yeah,
that's a. I was always curious about that question. I like throwing that little one out about Queensrÿche, because I figured that out a couple weeks ago, and I was like, man.
That's interesting.
That's kind of the first one, if you really think about it. Then everybody kind of changed. I still think when you talk about the big four for records, you know, and you kind of rank them for the thrash era.
Yeah.
I think Rust in Peace is just
so good. Yeah.
Such an unbelievable. That's a 10 out of 10 record for me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think it's the only thing on there that's a tiny bit weak for me. And it's not really a big song. It's Dawn Patrol, because it's just kind of that weird thing. But man, it's just very solid. Yeah. Yeah.
That record, dude, it's just, you can tell Dave was just on a different playing field on that record, man. Absolutely.
So,
and Maiden fans, sorry for taking the.
No, absolutely not.
There, sorry.
I've reviewed more Megadeth albums than any other band other than Maiden on my podcast. So,
nice.
Megadeth, Ozzy. I've done. I like to change it up a little here and there. You know, I feel like, hey, it's my podcast. No one's paying me to do this. So,
right.
So let me ask you this, because in closing here, I know you're on a little bit of a time constraint as well. So if you had to tell me, you already said your favorite album was Power Slave, correct?
No, Seventh Son.
Seventh Son, sorry. If you had to name, and this is a big question here, I can rank all 168 of their songs or whatever. If you had to just right now, gun to your head, tell me your five favorite Iron Maiden songs.
Oh God. All right. Off the top of my head, Passchendaele, Hallowed Be Thy Name. Oh God, that's such a
I know.
Hard question.
I hate those questions.
Seventh Son of a Seventh Son.
Mm-hmm. I can make it easier for you.
See, some of the great records that they put out, like the singles, or the people, I shouldn't say singles, the songs that people really loved, kind of like wore out for me. Because I could put The Trooper in that top five, but I can't because of, you know, that. Oh my God, this is such a great question, because I'm trying to think, I'm trying not to cheat and look at the albums. I'm just trying to think at the top of my head. I like Power Slave. I'll put Power Slave in there because I absolutely love that guitar solo.
Yeah.
The middle guitar solo is just amazing. I'm thinking more in guitar player eyes.
Yeah.
And let's go old school and say Phantom of the Opera.
I was gonna say I can change it up. I can say favorite Deano era, favorite, you know, Number of the Beast.
Oh.
So you said so Phantom would have to be, you named, that's the one. So if you were saying favorite song from Number of the Beast through Power Slave, you said Power Slave.
I say how by that name.
Hallowed? Okay.
Yeah, that's just so classic. Even though it's been overplayed, it's just, it's where you can tell they were going.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where they went. I mean, that was the first tune. I mean, you could feel it on
Phantom.
There's a theme here, obviously. You could feel it on Phantom.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Nothing else. And then Hallowed Be the Name. Mm-hmm. And then you could see them really starting to take off into that direction.
Okay. From Seventh Son and Somewhere in Time.
Top five or just one?
Just one of those songs. Best one from those, your favorite from those two. Not best, because best is, they're all subjective.
Yeah, subjective
favorite,
for
yeah.
Sure. Oh, God. Okay, I'm going to throw a curveball because I didn't mention this, but now you got me thinking more. The Clairvoyant.
Okay.
I've always had a soft spot for The Clairvoyant. Yeah. I love the major guitar lead where it's minor the whole time. It's major in the beginning, it's minor. It's a thing called parallel minor for your guitar musician nerds that listen to the show, where it starts off on D major and then the verses go D minor and then the lead goes, you know, back to major key.
Yeah.
That might be my favorite out of the bunch.
Okay. What about from No Prayer and Fear of the Dark?
Oh God, I have to cheat real quick. Sorry, hold on one second.
And while you're looking, I'm going to say this. The reason that people say, there's a lot of people that will come out and say Fear of the Dark's one of their favorite albums, and the only reason they say that is because Fear of the Dark has never left the live set.
And I don't disagree with you on that, but there's another tune off of that record that I really dig.
Judas Be My Guide is awesome. I'll say that.
Join a blank.
Be Quick or Be Dead? Afraid to Shoot Strangers?
Afraid to Shoot Strangers.
Okay.
Be Quick or Be Dead, I like too. There's like three on that record I like, and if I go back to No Prayer,
I'm a big No Prayer fan. I like No Prayer.
I think so too. Yeah, No Prayer I think is the song off that for me. Oh, and cool. I have that soft spot for Tail Gunner.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Sorry.
That's hey, it's all good. What about the Blaze albums?
I don't even think I have a favorite song off of those records, man, to be honest with you. Off of X Factor, maybe Man on the Edge, and then off of Virtual 11, I do like the Clansman, probably my favorite, you know, maybe because I've heard Bruce sing it too, so
yeah.
I think Angel and the Gambler's a good song too.
Okay, and then I'm trying to think. The next era is very hard to tie together because Brave New World is its own thing and then Dance of Death is its own thing and then they're all separate, so that's good enough that you went through the you went through everything and you even named what's the song you named off of Dance of Death, the war song.
Passchendaele.
Yeah, absolutely. Passchendaele's.
Love Passchendaele.
I will say this too, lastly,
sure,
Empire of the Clouds. For years, I've always kind of liked it. That, you know, there are two things. The part in the song where it goes dun 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 dun. That is the whatever they use, the little clicking thing for SOS. That's SOS, and it's in the song at a certain stage. So if you listen to it knowing that, you're like, given where it's at, dun dun dun, and then it. The other thing is, and I'll send you this later. There's a video that I found on YouTube. Somebody basically put the pictures and the lyrics along with the song, to kind of tell the story and show the story. And when I when I watched that, that song went from being, yeah, I like it, to it's top 20 Iron Maiden song all time for me. Like, I love it after that. I was like, the lyrics tell the story. The music tells the story. Like, Bruce wrote a masterpiece. It's so good. So
it's funny when, you know, every once in a while I listen to Rick Rubin's Broken Record podcast, and he interviewed each member of the Chili Peppers for the new record, the double record, or the two records they put out in 1 year. And it was neat because you understood why they were thinking, what they were doing when they were writing those songs for that record. And I wish it was something I'd love to do. I just don't have the clout to get famous guests on, but I would love to be able to do that and say, okay, so for, you know, Number of the Beast, like, explain your songwriting process, explain this, explain that, like, you know, how did you come up with a song like this? You know, who's the person behind this tune? I would love to do that, because I think if you hear what songs are about, I think you do get what you did, where you get more invested into the song because you start realizing, like, man, like this, or like, you know, like Every Breath You Take by The Police. I always laugh my ass off when I saw that VH1 special where he's like, it's a song about a stalker.
Exactly.
And Sting goes, at one point it was the number one wedding song.
And then you take that into consideration, you go, oh,
whoops.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. I think that's important stuff. And I think another reason why I think a lot of people do like Maiden also is a lot of the historical content too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've got a guy that does history episodes. He's done about 12 or 13 so far, where he'll take the actual events that inspired, say, Passchendaele. He did Passchendaele's when he did. And he digs real deep into the real events behind what happened in the song. It's not what led to Steve writing the song or whatever. It's what led to, you know, what inspired the song.
And see, that's very cool.
It's very cool. It's really, it's always mind blowing every time I hear it. So, but, I gotta say, Eric, I really have enjoyed the conversation, man. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate you taking the time, and going through all of the audio or tech hiccups we had at the beginning of this thing. I really appreciate you coming on here and doing this. It's been a blast to talk to you, man.
Thanks, brother. I really appreciate it too. It's always fun talking Maiden, and I like talking with people that know the history of the band, and we can just have a cool, intelligent discussion, a conversation, man. That's what Mixtapes is about, my show.
Yeah.
You know, I try to interview people that I really want to kind of learn more about, you know, and kind of ask cool little questions that I don't get, you know, that I don't know about, and I get it from the horse's mouth, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So, yeah, I super enjoyed this conversation, man. Anytime you want to have me back on, man, I would be honored to come back on the show.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it. If you'll send me a couple of links to your podcasts, I'll throw them in the show notes as well. So if anyone wants to check it out, because you're on Apple, you're on Spotify, everywhere you can find podcasts, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect, man. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Cool.